From Santa Barbara, California, Timeless Voyager Radio with Bruce Stephen Holmes, self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers in the fields of psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
And this is Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio. And I tell you, what an exciting show I have for you today or this evening, depending on when you're listening to it. My guest coming up is author, speaker, Michael Lindemann. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Glad to be here, Bruce. Who studies of human contact with other intelligent life.
All right. I'm glad you did that because that's very important. We're going to be talking about all of those non-human. Now, of course, you know I have that problem with the word human because I believe that the human accounts for about 90% of all the extraterrestrials, but perhaps when you use non-human, you're using it in the very general sense that these are not Earth beings.
Well, that's important, Bruce. That is what I mean, yes. We have to somewhat arbitrarily define what we mean by human. And what I mean in this instance is beings which are genetically compatible with ourselves who originate here on planet Earth. Now, there may be beings who are, in fact, genetically compatible with ourselves who originate somewhere else. These beings may be very closely related to us or not. I mean, obviously, the possibilities are limitless. But I do not refer to them as human, at least not in this context.
Okay. Well, you're on the air for one reason, and that is because you are probably one of the more connected people that I know of in the UFO community. So why don't you set the stage, and I'll just follow along.
Well, Bruce, I think there are a couple of things that we should discuss. Certainly, there's been an awful lot of discussion lately about the Roswell incident. It's back in the news. Now, this may be old hat for some of your listeners, but there are some new wrinkles, and I'm sure that some of your listeners already know that there is this claim that film has been found or is now in the hands of a man in England named Ray Santilli. There's been a lot of discussion about this, primarily on the Internet, because our U.S.-American press has managed almost entirely to ignore this. However, there is one exception which has just come up, and that is that down in Albuquerque, New Mexico, perhaps some of your listeners are even down there, Congressman Stephen Schiff has announced just in the last few days, that would be the middle part of July, that he saw this film, that he was given a private showing of this film in Washington by a representative of Ray Santilli's, and that he found it most intriguing. The one quote that I've gotten from a newspaper down there is that the congressman says he is keeping an open mind on the actual nature of this film.
I know, Michael, let me interrupt for one second.
Uh-huh.
Just for the sake of listeners who are not up to speed on what we're talking about,
okay,
maybe you could just back up for a second and give maybe a just a little bit of a frame as to what we're talking about and why Roswell is so important.
Absolutely. Let me frame it a couple of ways. First of all, I'm sure most of your listeners know that there is a long-running controversy over the possibility that something crashed in 1947, July of 1947, near Roswell, New Mexico, and that something may have been a craft of some sort from off-planet, and that it may have indeed had bodies. The bodies, the craft, and all the rest may have been recovered and sequestered by the military and have been the subject of great controversy ever since. That controversy really came to light after almost 30 years of silence, since all the people involved in the cover-up of whatever it was were sworn to silence and held their silence until about the end of the 1970s. So 30 years passed, and then people started talking. A number of books came out, and there's been a lot of a building controversy ever since. The newest wrinkle is that someone claims they actually were employed by the military to film all of this. And so this film suddenly came to light, as far as the public is concerned, earlier this year, 1995. It is said that the film was actually changed hands from the original cameraman, a man who is called Jack Barnett, though that may not be his name, an American, It changed hands, was given to or sold to perhaps a group of entrepreneurs from England, and ended up in the hands of a man named Ray Santilli, an English entrepreneur involved primarily with the rock and roll industry, as I understand it. In any case, Mr. Santilli has this film, and in the early part of this year, approximately February of this year, a former rock star named Reg Presley, who some of your listeners will recall was the lead singer of a group called The Troggs, went on a morning talk show in London and said he had seen this film and it was really something. Well, that was the first we heard of it. After that, the controversy erupted very quickly. One thing led to another. And a few other people said that they, too, had been shown the film in private. Finally, after much back and forth, accusations and so forth, the film was shown to a select group of people, including a number of notable UFO researchers, members of the press, a number of physicians, and other people who were in some position to judge its veracity. And all of these people were collected together by invitation only at the Museum of London, a fairly prestigious location, on May the 5th. They were shown the film. It was shown without explanation. The whole thing lasted about 18 minutes. They were ushered in, they were ushered out, and left to discuss it as they wished to do. A very interesting gambit on Ray Santilli's part, if he knew, as some people have accused him of, that this film was a fake. He certainly put it in front of some people who were in a position to judge it a fake. And the overall outcome of that, I judge to be confusion. Some people labeled it a fake right off the bat. Many others, no less smart and responsible, said, not so sure.
Right. Now, you and I have talked about this a few times, and we've both flip-flopped. And, of course, I, having not been as well-connected as you, know that when we first heard about it, you were excited and I was excited. And the next time I talked to you, you felt kind of disappointed. But at this point, you still have not actually seen the film yourself, have you?
No, I have not. I have, however, seen a number of stills from the film. And I have talked with a number of people who have seen the film, and I have, of course, listened with great interest to the great deal of back-and-forth controversy about the film. And my current judgment is solidifying, I must say, around the idea that the film is fake. However, it's, as some of these fakes are, an important fake in a certain sense. Somebody went to a lot of trouble in this case. It's possible that the film was actually shot on film stock from vintage 1947. That doesn't mean it was made then, but perhaps the film stock was of that vintage.
Right. Now, the reason that that's important is that because one of the qualifiers that I understand comes from Kodak, who has authenticated at least the fact that the film is 1940s.
Well, what they've actually said is that there is a coding, which is a series of geometric symbols along the edge of the film that indicates that it is either 1947 or 1967 or 1987, because the coding recycles every 20 years.
Wow, that's a little bit different from what I heard. So.
Yeah, well, now, there's a further uncorroborated rumor that Kodak has declared the film to be of 1947 vintage. That, however, to my knowledge, has not been absolutely substantiated.
Now, you know, of course, or at least I'm going to say, that is Santilli's contention at this point.
That is correct. Now, there is one thing in his favor in that regard, and that is that, as far as we know, the film actually was, when it was first uncovered and changed hands and got into the possession of Ray Santilli, it was on a large number, anywhere from 14 to 20 or more, canisters of 3-minute film loops. Now, that would correspond well with the cameras in use in that era, in the 1940s era. And if those canisters are authentically, you know, these 3-minute canisters, then we would have to say, well, they weren't doing it that way anymore in 1967, 1987. So it's a good bet that it could be filmed that old. Again, doesn't mean that the film was actually shot that year. It's just possible that the film is of that vintage but was somehow, you know, on ice and found and used more recently. That's a little bit far-fetched, but of course not more far-fetched than the fact that this shows aliens. So let's look at that claim. What we've got is an autopsy. Now, by the way, the film allegedly shows a variety of other things. There is film that will run, if it was all put together, somewhere between 1 and 2 hours. That length of time is also somewhat controversial. But what has been shown publicly so far is approximately 18 minutes of this film, which focuses only on one thing, an autopsy. The autopsy itself appears to be authentic. The body involved appears to be an authentic biological body, and it is certainly an unusual body, but it is probably not an alien body.
Now, what at this point brings you to a conclusion like that?
Well, first of all, you know, we have to say, how does it square with all previous reports of the bodies allegedly recovered at Roswell? And unfortunately, it does not square very well. The bodies alleged to be found at Roswell were said to be very frail, diminutive bodies, probably not more than 4 feet tall, not heavily muscled, certainly humanoid-looking, but not like the body that we see in this autopsy. We see a body which, first of all, is female in the sense that a vagina is plainly evident. We see a body, however...
Now that's an interesting point, because now, in my understanding from listening to Santilli, it was his contention that there are no sex organs on this body.
No, not true. There is a vagina plainly evident. What there aren't are secondary sex organs, such as breasts, pubic hair, and so forth. That is missing.
This could just be somebody from L.A.
This is interesting now, because what we have here is a set of characteristics which, if they correspond to a genetic deformity, they are certainly a rare deformity. I have heard it said by one physician who viewed still pictures of the body that it could, in fact, conform to a certain known, very rare, genetic deformity. However, what we have here, just to get back to the description, is a heavily muscled body, a body where the legs in particular are impressively muscled. The arms show muscle. There is a the neck is heavily muscled, none of which corresponds particularly well to the descriptions of the bodies from other Roswell witnesses, nor to what we commonly associate with a woman, unless that woman tends to be, you know, happens to be a weightlifter.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
But there are other problems.
This wasn't an ESPN special.
Not that we know of.
Right.
This body is completely without breast tissue that shows at all. And the head is very unusual. The facial features look human enough. The eyes are quite large. They're certainly not large like the eyes of a gray, but they're quite large. The head itself swells a great deal in the back. More of the skull is situated behind the neck than one normally finds in a human, where the neck actually forms... there's only a very slight bulge to the skull behind the neck on a normal human skull. But in this case, the quite considerable amount of the skull bulges back behind the neck, and the head itself overall is very large in that regard. The ears are set very low on the face, much lower than normal. All in all, a very odd-looking being. Add to that one more feature, polydactylism, 6 fingers and toes, you've got quite an interesting character indeed. However, by all indications, according to a number of physicians and even a high-ranking British pathologist who viewed the film, it does appear to be a genuine body, and it may indeed correspond to known human deformities. Polydactylism is certainly a known deformity, but it does not necessarily correspond to the other deformities. In other words, this body may actually suffer from a variety, a whole constellation of deformities.
Or we're deformed.
well, or, but you know, if you think about this now, if the body's real and if all the deformities that we see are part of that body, of the original form of that body, then we're really up against something because somebody went to some real trouble here. That body would be a hard one to come by.
One of the things that we're looking at here is that, as I said before, what I appreciate about you is as a researcher, you try to hold a non-bias. And that of course, is very important when investigating, because if you've, well, we all have a bias in a way, but at least the non-bias, or at least your bias isn't as far out as some people I've had on the show. So you like to look at this thing from a scientific point of view, and you're pointing out, I think, very well, all of the anomalistic characteristics that could possibly be accounted for. So coming back to the point where you're saying, okay, let's say the body is of a anomalistic human.
Yes.
All right. So we've come to that point. Now the question would be, all right, why then would someone hand us an autopsy of this person? And so either way, this works out very well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. We have a problem here no matter what. And this is why I said earlier, Bruce, that though I am leaning toward the verdict of a hoax, it is not a simplistic hoax. It is not a, you know, it is not a goofball hoax. One could imagine putting together, you know, some sort of celluloid Hollywood creation and taking it out on the back lot and shooting, you know, something that, you know, looked superficially to the sort of untutored eye like a body undergoing an autopsy. But some very well-tutored eyes have looked at this, and they say, no, this is a biological organism here, and though it is very odd, it is very likely to be a human organism, and it is, in fact, undergoing a genuine autopsy. Now, the autopsy itself is not by no means an exemplary example of the autopsy art. It goes very fast. It tends to be kind of sloppy. A number of people have noted that the conduct of the autopsy indicates the possibility that the person doing it was not well versed in autopsy as such, but may have been a general surgeon.
But then again, this certainly adds to the possibility that this is at least authentic time-wise.
Yes.
In that we've become very sophisticated in the last 10 years or so. So that's what trained eyes would be looking for.
Yes. There are some other interesting things. Immediately when this film was first shown on May the 5th, some people raised the objection that there were a few things in the film that appeared to be out of place. For example, there is a phone on the wall, and the phone has a curly phone cord to the handset. And the objection was raised, if this is 1947, such curly handset cords simply weren't there. Well, that turns out to be not true. There are, in fact, records showing that those curly handsets did come in a little bit prior to 1947.
And they were, and incidentally, just to corroborate that, from what I have heard, this was definitely prevalent on bases who generally have certainly technologies long before we consumers have them.
Exactly. There would be every reason to suppose that such things would show up on a military base before they'd show up down at the corner store. So that's a possibility. The clock, people said, well, that clock is all wrong. Turns out the clock isn't wrong at all. The clock dates probably from somewhere in the neighborhood of 1938 or so. Some of the people in the film were shown wearing unusual suits, almost like a radiation suit. That too was said to be anachronistic, out of place. Turns out probably not. The suit itself was not unknown in those days. And in fact, if there was real concern of contamination, whether from radiation or microorganisms or whatever, the wearing of such an unusual suit would perhaps be entirely justified. So there are elements in this film which are sophisticated enough that we have to say someone went to some trouble here. Someone wanted this to look real. Someone got a real surgeon. Someone got a very, very unusual body. And what may make it even more unusual is that, according to reports, There are at least two other completely separate autopsy sequences which appear to use a different but similar body. Now, if there is a second body that is so unusually deformed and yet still human, then we have to say, wow, someone really went to some trouble on this one. And of course, that goes even further in the direction of saying, by golly, do we have aliens after all? Where in the world did they get two of these bodies? Now, the big difference between the bodies is that the one shown in the May 5 Museum of London showing had a very large, very, very prominent wound in the leg. I've seen still pictures of this wound. It's unmistakable. A huge piece of flesh has been literally ripped away, as if the leg had been, you know, partly severed by a tremendous impact. The other body doesn't show that wound, and that's very interesting. So, what have we got here? We've got a problem that is sure to remain controversial for some time to come. I liken it to the MJ-12 documents. In fact, I some time ago coined the term the NJ-12 syndrome to refer to a piece of information which is sophisticated enough.
Okay, let's we got to fill this in then. All right, so for people who don't know MJ-12, maybe you could do just really quick.
Okay, well, you know, some years ago, 1987, a document that has come to be known as the MJ-12 document was made public. It was published in a couple of different books and immediately set off a storm of controversy because it purports to be a top secret briefing document for President Eisenhower, created back in 1952. And the document purports to explain to the president that sometime prior to his becoming president, the U.S. government and military had come into possession of alien artifacts from a crash at Roswell. And indeed, it mentions specifics about that incident and specifics about some other alleged UFO crashes. And it explains to the president that all this has been a matter of super secrecy. And as president, he is required to know this, but the whole thing is really in other hands, and this is more or less for his eyes only. The MJ-12 document is a most controversial document, and most researchers, after a great deal of back-and-forth controversy, have concluded that it's a hoax. Some have not. Stanton Friedman, for example, remains convinced that very likely is authentic. I, myself, am persuaded that it is a hoax. But it is emblematic of the very problem we're talking about. A lot of study has gone into trying to determine just exactly where that document came from and who did it and on whose agenda it was done, what was the purpose of it, and so forth, and it remains a sort of an impenetrable mystery. It is probably a hoax, but if so, it's a hoax that someone went to a lot of trouble about and did so skillfully that we can only assume that it is part of a larger and probably very secret agenda. Now, we have these bodies associated with the Roswell incident. Whatever they are, they're probably not crash-recovered bodies from the Roswell incident, but they are something interesting to be sure. They are something that came about because somebody with some money and some savvy and a very intense agenda saw to it that this film was made and had the patience to do it in a way that leaves us all scratching our heads. And this is what I mean by the MJ-12 syndrome. We have a probable hoax perpetrated probably within a very large and convoluted agenda that causes us to believe that somebody really goes to a lot of trouble to keep us guessing about what this whole alien business is really all about.
You're familiar with Sitchin's work.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are not, you can pick up any number of 6 books by Zachariah Sitchin, books like The 12th Planet and so on and so forth. And, of course, there's Bramley's book, The Gods of Eden. Basically, always talking about the fact that our heritage is extraterrestrial. I'll put that in quotes, because if our heritage is extraterrestrial, then we are extraterrestrials too.
Yep.
So there's no such thing. But over and over again, comes up this description of our progenitors as being human, however, being perhaps 12 to 22 feet in height, and we being nothing more than miniature replications, genetically made, I guess, to keep us under their thumb, so to speak. What is interesting about this is that you and I have talked many times about some of these agendas that are kind of interesting. And it seems to me that maybe it's not as scary to see another human. And many times humans have come out of these ships that are 6 feet tall, look just like us, except they have silver suits on.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't tend to scare the listener who hears about this as much as the idea that out of the ship comes an insect.
Yes, that's correct.
And you and I have discussed the idea that there is an agenda. We have never really agreed on where it comes from, but there is an agenda to make people feel fearful about anything other than the human on the earth. And I think if you're moving in this direction, I wanted to help you forward and say that when we come across a body like this that is certainly much different from us and certainly doesn't look like us, the first thing is, should we fear this thing?
The question of fear is one of the most important ones in this whole business. And you're right, the further away the body gets from what we typically call human, the more likely it is that people will have a fear response. Indeed, when we see somebody on the street that we see is very badly deformed, there is a certain visceral reaction that comes up for many of us. It's involuntary. We react badly to difference. We react badly to the idea that someone is standing there who is really grossly different from ourselves. And certainly if we thought that this being were from elsewhere and looked as different, as you say, as an insect, and of course there are reports of such things, one response could be outright terror. Now, our government may be aware that there are beings who look very different from ourselves who pose that kind of a problem. Whether these beings are genuinely malevolent or not is a whole separate question.
Let me interject one thing, too, just to come back to the insect. As you are very well aware of, it has been said or purported that the most benevolent of all of the higher extraterrestrials are the praying mantis type, just to kind of throw a spin on this for people. Which really is kind of strange because, you know, there are a lot of people in L.A., I keep talking about L.A., that look like you and I who are not benevolent.
Well, that's absolutely right. Quite so. In other words, people who look just like us, in fact, are, you know, every bit as human as we are, nonetheless have shown themselves capable of the most atrocious behavior and you know, are rightly to be feared. On the other hand, you know, there may indeed be beings who look extraordinarily bizarre to our eyes, like a praying mantis type, who could be very, very benevolent. I think our government, assuming that they do know that there are such beings around, has had quite a problem on its hands for quite some time. Partly the problem is, will humans respond en masse with great fear and terror, and will that in effect rip society to shreds due to rioting and so forth? That certainly is one kind of downside scenario. But there's an interesting other scenario too that I think we probably don't give as much credence to, but I've thought about it a lot, and that is, supposing the aliens A, look a lot like us, and B, are really, really nice, would that in a certain sense be just as discomforting to our government as ugly-looking, atrocious things? And my guess is the answer is yes. In fact, I've gone so far in some lectures as saying the worst kind of alien is a really good alien, an alien who would seem to the average person on the street as a really really unmistakable improvement over the people we call leaders.
Yeah, let's just talk just for a moment, even though whether you believe this or not, Frank E. Strange has his description of Valiant Thor.
Yeah.
Now, if you want, maybe we could use that as an example and just maybe give a quick little description of Valiant Thor. I don't know if you want me to or you would like to do it.
Well, you can go ahead. I know you know the story.
Okay. Valiant Thor supposedly is a gentleman who certainly doesn't age. He's probably looks like he's in about his mid-30s. Very, very handsome gentleman. According to Frank Strange, has no fingerprints. He is able to do all of those things that that you've heard about. Everything from heal the sick to become invisible if he needs to. And purportedly, Valiant Thor went to Eisenhower and met with then President Eisenhower and Vice President Nixon and offered, according to the story, a tremendous amount of information, and our government absolutely reneged on it. They
right.
just did not want it.
Yeah.
So.
And whether or not the story of Valiant Thor is true, there are certainly similar stories told about other beings and other times, a theme, in fact, that aid has been offered over and over again by beings who look perhaps a great deal like ourselves, who are very benevolent, and who have asked only that we, for example, that we give up warfare as a normal practice.
Right, and that, and matter of fact, just to interject, the common thread has always been to stop all research in nuclear energy and to entirely disarm all nuclear stockpiles.
Right, that has been a very common thread, and in fact, among abductees, there is talk too about the threat of nuclear war is one of the things that's often brought up as the biggest problem that we have on this planet. And of course, on a strictly practical level, that may well be true. A nuclear war is one of the very few things that could actually occur on this planet, that we know can occur on this planet, after which we simply have no idea what's possible. We simply cannot predict the future beyond a nuclear war, and it may, except to say that in all likelihood it would be really, really bad for almost everybody. So clearly there's a great deal of common sense in the idea of trying to prevent nuclear war, and hopefully we're making some progress in that regard with or without the aliens. But it's occurred to me that if our governments around the world, not just American but others as well, are primarily in the business of staying in power, which I believe they are, certainly they would not take great comfort in the arrival of beings who, A, look human and therefore are not particularly scary, and B, clearly have all kinds of nifty tricks up their sleeve that would be good for everybody, and C, are very generous in their overall outlook and demeanor, and therefore would obviate the need for controlling a government that taxes people and allows poverty and fights wars with reckless abandon and so forth. In other words, the arrival of such beings would gravely threaten the status quo, perhaps as much or more than the arrival of beings who are somewhat scarier, who could, by contrast, actually pose and become a unifying influence among various governments around the planet. For that reason, some people, I don't necessarily share this view, but some people believe that the story of the gray aliens, for example, the very big-eyed, buggy kind of guys who are kind of scary to most people, that is a perfect foil. It's just make-believe, but politically very useful idea for getting people just scared enough that they will turn to the government for help, for understanding, for protection. That kind of alien is perhaps politically the most useful alien of all, particularly, of course, if it is make-believe and if it only exists because the incidents of that alien are created by some kind of high-tech sleight of hand, and there are some people who think that's exactly what's going on. I happen to not think that is the proper explanation, but I do appreciate the idea that the best kind of alien from a political point of view would be an alien which is essentially inscrutable, whose motives are hard to judge, whose behavior is kind of in between, where it's okay, where it makes sense to be scared, and yet there's no real solid evidence that major damage is being done. That kind of alien, if you nuance that particular tone just right, that kind of alien has real political advantages. And, of course, that is the kind of alien that we hear the most about by far.
Now, if we just go back to the days of the Cold War, not that we're out of the Cold War, but we go back to the obvious Cold War.
Yeah.
The issue was that the communists were not to be trusted, and that they were bad people, and that they had to be eradicated from the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how we developed our incredible war machine.
That's correct.
And there were lots of jobs, and lots of people made a lot of money with that.
That's correct.
So basically what we are talking about, I think what I'm gleaning from what you're saying, and I you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're saying is that this is a perfect way to say, well, okay, everything's here on the Earth, but off the Earth it's not. So we still need to have the war machine.
That is correct. That would be a very clever political ploy. And its very obvious cleverness is why some people think it's got to be what's in place. I don't necessarily agree. But I think that the possibility of extremely malevolent aliens is not showing up in the evidence very strongly to me. What I see instead is a range of possible alien types, from beings who are essentially here on their own business, who are, you might call them poachers, you might call them...
I call them pirates.
Pirates, good term.
I call them pirates, and I say, folks, you wouldn't judge an entire culture based on pirates or kidnappers.
Right.
I mean, we know that stuff happens. That happens here.
Exactly.
But we don't think that all human beings are pirates or kidnappers.
Right, and I think that's appropriate. So we have perhaps a pirate class of aliens that are showing up here. We may have others that look very much like those same pirates, who are by no means pirates, who are very nice, or who have... you know, at the very least, kind of benign intentions if they're going about their own business. And then, indeed, we may have a whole bunch of other beings running the gamut from beings that we can't even see to beings who may look to our eyes quite grotesque, and others who may look exactly like we do, who are, really quite nice and overall mean us no harm and would even gladly help us if only we would be a little bit reasonable. And I think that group of aliens really does pose quite a political problem.
Now let's bring this thing around now for a second, because I think we've gone out enough to come back to around what I think you were about to say.
Okay.
So the point of the Roswell, the quote unquote Roswell autopsy photo, or the movie, okay, if there's another agenda, I think it would work well then in what we were just talking about, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. Yes, it would. Here you've got an alien that is human enough to not be horribly scary, but weird enough to be to cause some alarm and consternation. At the same time, it puts the entire UFO research community on the defensive, and heaven knows the government wants to do that whenever they can, because heaven knows they don't want any of the UFO research community to get the upper hand as regards Roswell. And of course, when you get a congressman involved in calling the government and saying, you guys are hiding something and it's time for you to tell us what it is, well, that causes, some alarm bells to go off. And it would be entirely appropriate in that situation to throw a major red herring into the Roswell scene and watch everybody fight over this thing for, perhaps years, as they did with the MJ-12 papers. I mean, the fight there isn't even over yet, and for several years it was a really really quite a gun battle. So this is a perfect setup for confusion and controversy, and for the continuing process that I think the government is primarily in with respect to the alien situation, which is to buy time. To see what else transpires, to see who knows what, and to see what the aliens are up to. Up until very, very recently, it has seemed to me that the aliens were not particularly pushing for self-revelation, although at this point I'm not sure. It may be that the timetable is speeding up in some sense, and that may be the reason that we're seeing more and more of these controversial outings of this kind of material. Because I think this does overall have the effect of subliminally preparing people for some kind of revelation, whether it be a carefully orchestrated revelation on the part of the government or whether it be a sudden, unexpected revelation on the part of the aliens or on the part of some witness who brings forth a true smoking gun, which, of course, so far hasn't really happened, but it could. And, in other words, what our government wants, above all, is the preservation of order and the preservation of the current power hierarchy.
And I want to throw in the word manipulation.
Well, they manipulate for that reason, for those purposes, okay? They want to manipulate public opinion and public reaction so that the status quo is preserved and the power hierarchy in its current form is preserved as far as possible. As long as those goals can be accomplished, then it's okay in the end for people to realize there are aliens here. The problem has been that there's a chasm there, a chasm of public distrust, a chasm of just pure psychological reactivity on the part of people in general that causes a lot of concern in government circles. Now, I think there's been a lot of, you might say, desensitization going on. I think the Roswell controversy adds to that. I think MJ-12 added to that. Certainly, all the kinds of stuff you see on TV these days, whether it is intentionally orchestrated or not, and I'm not sure that it is, by the way, I think that when you have an enormous amount of fairly good quality programming on television, on all the networks and various serialized programs and so forth, saying, okay, look, you know, people are getting abducted and this is happening, da-da-da, and doctors come on and lots of experiencers show up on TV. Well, this has the effect of reducing the reactivity quotient, if you will, among the general public. And every day that we can do more of this means a little less likelihood of social catastrophe if and when, you know, the truth comes out.
So we're being essentially weaned off the idea that up until very recently the government, and incidentally I should clear up this word government too, well-placed people with particular agendas in the government.
Yes. and that's an important distinction. I completely agree. That's
the reason it's an important description, and you were the one who told me this, and I'm the one who says it now. It's got to work that way. Otherwise, all of these people who swear before a grand jury or so on and so forth that they don't know what we're talking about wouldn't be able to say that.
That's right.
So, I mean, basically, you and I have agreed that this is really deep. This is a deep area of the government. We didn't actually agree whether we could call it the government, but whatever it is, it's a group of people who are certainly responsible for what our political officials don't even know.
That's correct.
And of course, when you look to your political representative and ask him, "Is this true?" he can say, "No, it's not," or "I don't know what you're talking about," because he doesn't know.
That is correct.
Or she doesn't know.
That is correct. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
I don't know. I flew off on that one for
a second. No. That's important because you see, I think at this point, a lot of people in government would be just as surprised as any other person would be surprised to learn that there's actually something to this.
Well, for example, you and I both know that Schiff started out because he wanted to find out where the money was going.
Well, yes.
I mean, that was. I don't want to speak for him, but in the quick interview I had with him last year. It seemed to me that he was more interested in finding out where was the money going, because he felt like that would be important. He'd like to know where the money was going. If the money is definitely going into underground research facilities that are covering up for the fact that we've been having ongoing relationships with extraterrestrials for 50 years, he'd like to know why we're paying for it if we can't know about it.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And indeed, the General Accounting Office, which is doing a background investigation on Roswell at the specific request of Congressman Schiff, isn't really looking for aliens and UFOs. It's looking for a paper trail. It's looking to see if our government kept the proper records, and it's looking to see if any public funds were improperly used. And that's what the General Accounting Office does. And so, in an odd way, it could be almost equivalent to, jailing Al Capone for tax evasion. You know, when we know darn well he killed bunches of people, you get him on tax evasion. In this instance, it may be a similar case. You know, the problem is the government is hiding UFOs, but the charge is they're misspending public funds.
Exactly.
And that would be a most interesting outcome.
Well, so we've talked about debunking, so to speak, the film. What if it's okay? Let's take the other side now, because you're good at that. Let's just throw everything out and take the other side now.
You mean that the film could be authentic?
Absolutely.
Well, that of course remains at least a slight possibility. There are people who certainly aren't ready to throw in the towel at all. One of those people is George Wingfield, who I have talked with a number of times. In fact, George is keeping us closely informed because he's in London and he does talk with Ray Santilli regularly. George may be known to some of your listeners as one of the top-ranking crop circle researchers, but he got very close to this Roswell film footage controversy as well. And George, having really more information than most other people about this, seems not at all ready to decide that the film is a hoax. He is deeply puzzled by where it came from and what it really shows and so forth. And what we haven't talked about, because I have no information about it as yet, is what the rest of the film shows. We've already noted that if the film includes, if the rest of the film includes some other autopsy sequences, which it's reported to be, the very idea that they would find two of these extraordinary bodies really is a problem. The bodies don't appear to be alien, but then again, if they're human, they're pretty weird. And if there are two of them, that's weirder still. We have to ask, why was this film made? One thing that came to mind, if it's not actually Roswell, is that it was a training film for military purposes, and that it was meant to depict accurately what it would be like to be involved in a super secret crash recovery situation, as if certain troops, elite troops, had to be trained for that purpose. I have been told that that's true, that certain elite troops were indeed trained for that purpose.
So once again, what does this say?
Exactly. Now, so in other words, there are shades of fakery here. One could simply say, well, this is a goofball film and some real tricksters went out and made this in the backyard. I don't think so. It's nothing like that at all. It's at least a competent, purposeful, sophisticated piece of fakery that has a deep purpose to it, historically speaking. That's my current judgment. And, of course, beyond that, just the ghost of a chance that it is in fact real. But if it's real, I would have to say hardly likely that it actually comes from Roswell. And that may simply be a mistake of information. In other words, if it is from some actual crash.
Yeah, there was a question I wanted to ask you right in the beginning. In other words, how is it that we have come to the point where putting the two together, it comes from Roswell? I mean, why not from the Soviet Union? Why not from, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I mean,
well,
because these things supposedly have been crashing all over the world.
Yeah, at least we can surmise that there have been a number of crashes involving a number of bodies. If there have been any at all, there have been several. The word Roswell came up in association with this film right from the very beginning. It may have come, I believe it did come, from the alleged cameraman, the so-called Jack Burnett. However, we've already said in this program why I think it's likely not Roswell. Barnett may have simply been mistaken, or the people who acquired the film from him may have been mistaken as to what he said. I mean, what if he said it was a crash like the one at Roswell because he figured they knew what that one was about?
Well, let's also account for something else. Now, this is not any kind of degrading remark about age, but let's figure out how old this guy is going to be, too. He's probably in his 80s.
Right. Yeah, that's right. In fact, I believe that's what they said, that this man is in his 80s.
Now, that doesn't mean that he didn't do it, and it doesn't mean that he doesn't know what he did, But it could mean that maybe he doesn't. Maybe he did a few of these. Maybe he doesn't remember where he was. I mean, there are a lot of possibilities here. Not just, you know, these things are not necessarily intentional. And of course, I'm not accusing you of saying they are. But on the other side of it, people can start to make judgments like that. And I don't think there's a lot of intention here.
Right. I think we should raise one more final point. I realize you're probably getting to the end of your program time here.
Yeah, actually, we got about 8 minutes to go. Good for you.
Okay. Well, I want to make
you're this, watching your clock.
I want to make this final point that the very idea that Jack Barnett could have gotten away with this film is pretty far-fetched. If we say, okay, there was a crash, there were bodies, Jack was called in, he did film it, all that's bona fide, and then he sneaked away with canisters of original film. That, I think you'd have to agree, is very, very far-fetched. Interestingly, there is a claim that a delegation from Taiwan was shown a portion of this film recently, and they said, oh, we've seen this before. And in response to that strange remark, when asked what they meant, they said, well, you know, the CIA was briefing us on some UFO-related information some time back and showed us footage from a sequence of films that were made, and this looks like the same stuff. Well, one thing led to another in this very bizarre conversation, and it came about that it was not exactly the same but looked similar to it. Now, what does this mean? Does this mean that there actually was an archive of film like this, that some of it was somehow sneaked away, that Jack Barnett himself was the one who sneaked it away, that the rest remains in CIA or military custody, and that in fact it has been used to brief other governments? I mean, obviously there is more to this controversy than meets the eye. These things keep coming up, and we have not by any means gotten to the bottom of it. So at this point, I think I would like to stop speculating. We've gotten pretty yeah. much to the end of our trail of facts.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this, Michael, is this, and again, I want to applaud you because it's very difficult to be a UFO researcher and not want to hold on to that promise that you've finally found the proof that everyone's been looking for.
Right.
On the other side of it, you have to be careful that you don't go too far over either, because people do listen to you, and I know that you try to. You're on a heck of a tightrope there, because you want to, you know, have people still want to listen to you when you talk about UFOs.
That's true, and the thing is, I think we're dealing with something too important to jump to silly kind of, you know, armchair general type of judgments. In the end, I believe we're going to learn, as you well know, I feel this way, that there is an alien presence on this planet. It has probably been here a long time. It has probably had an enormous amount to do with the evolution of human beings, if not as a species, then perhaps as culture. I believe that, you know, we're going to eventually discover that our sense of our own history is, you know, at the very least, lacking a lot of important detail and maybe incredibly wrong. And all of that will come about as we grow up enough to take full stock of this, what I consider to be a virtually certain alien presence on this planet. But at the same time, there's a huge amount of wishful thinking, a huge amount of intentional disinformation, a huge amount of the way people simply kid themselves, jumping to unwarranted conclusions and simply making mistakes of perception and analysis and judgment, which is, you know, the great plague, you might say, of ufology. So trying very hard to say what we do know, which is very little, and to keep an ever-watchful eye for mistakes, whether they be mistakes of fact or mistakes of analysis and judgment, which are easily made. In this case, we have some real facts. We have a factual body, in all likelihood. We certainly have film, but we have very little else to go on. Where did it come from? Who made it? Why? What's it for? These are the things we don't know yet.
Well, I think this is going to be a really good frame for people that have either not seen it. I hear that parts of it are going to be shown on television sometime soon.
Yes, I believe that's right.
Well, this has been really good, Michael. I know that I really appreciate you coming on. I know that those people who listen to you through the internet this way have been just, if they got this far, good for them.
Okay, good.
Thanks a lot, Michael. I'll talk to you soon.
It's been a pleasure, Bruce.
All right.
Take care.
All right.